background noise.
Okay, we're gonna get started, guys. Good morning. This is Sydney Armendariz here from the California Workforce Development Board, and thank you everyone for joining today's webinar, The Spotlight on DAPO. We received a lot of feedback from our local boards and AJCCs, so we're hosting this webinar to give you information about parole, its requirements, and the differences between parole and probation, presented by the Division of Adult Parole Operations with the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. So I'll just start off with a quick overview of the P2E initiative, or Prison to Employment Initiative. In July 2018, the legislature approved $37 million in state general funds for the P2E initiative to serve the formerly incarcerated and other justice-involved individuals. We received over $54 million in requests from the 14 regional planning units to serve over 6,000 participants. The initiative contains three grants. The first grant is the Regional Planning Grant, which was awarded in October 2018 to support the development of plans for each region's justice-involved population. The next two grants are the Regional Implementation and Direct Services Grants, which total $14 million and is intended to support the implementation of regional workforce corrections plans and provide direct services. The last grant is the Regional Supportive Services and Earn and Learn Grants, which total $20 million, which is to provide supportive services and earn and learn opportunities to clients. Next slide. I have a quick status update on the initiative's funding, which I know we're all waiting for. We announced final awards in June 2019, and we're currently developing contracts with the Employment Development Department in each regional planning unit to award the funding. We anticipate full execution will begin in September and throughout October. So if you have any questions about the P2E initiative, please refer to the contact information on this slide. And I'll turn it over to Joe Flores to give us some quick housekeeping information before I turn it over to DAPO.
Hi everybody, this is Joe Flores from the State Workforce Board. We are presently audio recording this webinar on our MP3 player, and we will be posting it on a website hosted by CWDB. And I have most of your emails via the calendar. I'll update the calendar with the live link later on today. But if those who I don't have your emails, you can email me at joe.flores@cwdb.ca.gov to receive a copy of this PDF presentation and the audio that we're about to have. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. So now I will go ahead and turn it over to the Division of Adult Parole Operations to present some information about their roles, responsibilities, and the parole process. We are grateful to have Estelina Lopez, a Parole Agent 3, and Ryan Yahtzee, a Parole Administrator, and also Sheila Green-Beck, I think I pronounced your last name correctly, Sheila Green-Beck, who's also a Parole Agent as well from Southern California, with the Reentry Coordination Program here to present to you today. So, Estelina, go ahead.
Good morning, this is Estelina. I'd like to thank all of you for making time out of your day this morning to join us for this webinar. We're hoping to give you a broad overview of what our division provides and what we as parole agents do. In addition, some of these slides will include some questions that have came up during our AJCC tours. What is parole? The Division of Adult Parole Operations, also known as DAPO, is responsible for protecting the community by enabling parole agents to have an active part in the local community's public safety plans, while providing a range of programs and services that offer state supervised parolees the opportunity for change, encouraging and assisting them in their efforts to reintegrate into the community. DAPO parole agents are committed to working closely with the Division of Rehabilitative Programs and other stakeholders to ensure parolees are referred to appropriate rehabilitative and transition programs that are currently available to help them find success and opportunities within their communities. EPRD, this was one of the questions that came up during a AJCC tour. EPRD is the earliest possible release date. It's a fixed term set by law, and the sentencing judge selects a term for each county and crime. So what that means is an EPRD is calculated by CDCR's case record staff for inmates who have not been sentenced to a life term. EPRDs can change for a number of reasons, such as disciplinary action, recalculation of dates due to court proceedings, credit earned for positive programming while an individual's in prison. Difference between county and state supervision. When an inmate is sent to be released from prison, he will either be supervised by county probation or state parole. Depending on what the individual was convicted for, will determine if he will be supervised by county or state parole. County supervision is also better known as probation. Probation is also known as post-release community supervision. Their criteria is the following. They supervise current nonviolent commitment offenses, current non-serious commitment offenses, and current non-high-risk sex offenders. State parole supervises current violent or serious commitment offenses that are defined by Penal Code 1192.7c and Penal Code 667.5c. We also supervise mentally disordered offenders, sexually violent predators, lifers, civil addicts, and USINS cases that meet the criteria, and interstate cases will also be supervised by DAPO.
So I think it's good to talk about a little more clearly on the differences. So everybody out there may be familiar with county probation departments, and those are, each county will have their own department that supervises offenders before they're sentenced sometimes, after their sentence, if they're not sentenced to state prison, they could be sentenced to county supervision on probation. Those are all offenders that have never reached a prison per se. What we're talking about here is when an offender goes to a state prison, and there's 35 institutions statewide, there's camps, and there's a number of different California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation institutions. When they're coming up to be released, staff determine whether their crime and offense determines whether they are going to be supervised post-release by the county, again, called post-release community supervision, as Estelina mentioned there, or if they're going to come to parole supervision. And so historically, prior to 2011, parole supervised all offenders that came out of prison. AB 109 changed that so that the counties then began supervising the lower level offenders, and parole would continue the supervision of the high risk, the violent or serious conviction offenders and sex offenders and lifers and such. So just want to make it clear that when a inmate is about to come out from prison back into his or her community, that's determined about 6 months prior to release, whether they're going to be supervised by the county under a probation officer versus the state, which is a parole agent. So just wanted to make sure you guys understood the difference, and if you have questions about that, we can talk more.
DAPO regions, how are they broken down? DAPO is composed of three entities, which are Division Headquarters, Northern Region, and Southern Region. Division Headquarters is here in Sacramento, and it oversees the reentry coordination program, policy and procedures, other units such as the community transitional program, electronic monitoring unit. The Northern Region, they oversee 9 districts, and they're comprised of 56 parole units covering from Del Norte and Modoc border down to Kern and Ventura County. Our Southern Region consists of 12 districts comprised of 67 parole units covering from San Bernardino to Los Angeles, and Los Angeles down to San Diego and Imperial County. When do parolees check in with their parole agents? Parolees are required to check in with their assigned parole agent, better known as their agent of record, on the first working day following their release from either prison or county jail. They must report to their agent of record anytime the agent of record requests. Normally, the parole agent will do their best to work around the parolee schedule to ensure they don't miss school, work, or any significant appointment unless absolutely necessary. This is one of the key reasons why communication is so critical between an individual on parole and their assigned parole agents. 9 times out of 10, an agent will work around and process schedules unless it's some and request to see the parolee unless it's something that absolutely can't wait. With that being said, it's equally as important for employers to know that if they need to reach the parole agent because they have a question or they have a concern regarding a parolee, they're also welcome to contact the parole agent at any given time.
And the map that was up there a minute ago, those are all the parole offices that are statewide, and just those are subject to change. Sometimes we move around, but this is the most recent one we have. And you know, if you ever had questions, or you know, once we get this rolled out, those will be the areas that will be. Our goal is to have the local AJCCs and the parole offices working together for these types of referrals for P2E. So, just FYI.
How often do parolees check in with parole? The agent of record will conduct unannounced home visits to the parolee residence. As indicated previously, the agent of record will work around the parolee schedule and will typically conduct the unannounced visits when they think the parolee will be at home. A parolee supervision is also going to determine when and how often the parole agent's going to conduct a visit, and that's determined by their supervision level. Parole agents with specialized caseloads supervise about 25 parolees, but this could vary if there's not enough agents or if something's going on in the unit, but typically it's more parolees. However, they're supposed to be at 25 parolees per one parole agent, and specialized caseloads consist of sex offenders, lifers, or gang members. For those agents who don't have a specialized caseload, they're supposed to be supervising about 53 parole agents, but again, most of the time they have more because if they're down agents in the unit. Parole agents wear two hats. In my opinion, this is one of the most unique things about what we do. As a parole agent, we assist and help guide an individual reintegrate back into our communities while at the same time supervise and hold them accountable should they decide to continue a criminal lifestyle. Some of the things we do are conduct investigations when parole violations or criminal behavior is alleged, and this includes interviewing, surveillance, search and seizure. We apprehend and arrest parolees who are suspected of involvement in criminal activities or violations of parole. We testify in administrative hearings and judicial proceedings, provide information to other community agencies regarding a specific parolee or the policy and procedures of CDCR, participate in the assessments of parolees' risk to the community and other type of services required. In addition to that, the other hat that we wear as a social worker is we perform duties such as work collaboratively with parolees and their support systems, family, friends, employers, community agencies, in order to best assist parolees in a successful reintegration or integration back into the communities. We make referrals to assist parolees with employment, housing, and social services. We task parolees with quarterly goals and progress reports in order to encourage the parolee to stay focused and live a positive and law-abiding lifestyle. When available, we give incentives such as food vouchers, gift cards, and bus passes.
And real quick on that too, I think, you know, the agent of record, the parole agent that supervises the parolee that will be coming into your employment centers is going to really know that parolee really well. We're in their house, we're talking to their family, we're talking to them, we see them monthly, we know their history and the things they struggle with. We're there encouraging them to do what is right, and we're trying to help them get work and get treatment and assist them in every way possible. So it is kind of a precarious position that our agents are in, because we tell them to protect the public and be law enforcement officers, but at the same time be social workers and advocates for our population, because they really need the assistance. And these we recognize they come from very diverse backgrounds and are in need of this type of service. So, you know, just to keep you guys, talk to your parole agents. They're going to know the person. They're going to have a good idea of, you know, how they'll do and the employment opportunities that might be of benefit. So we're really hoping to establish that contact between the agent of record and the case managers at the AJCCs, But also understand, too, with 53 participants on your caseload, and a lot of our caseloads are higher than that because of population, they're going to be they're extremely busy, and they're out there in the field, and they're dealing with 50 to 70 people on a daily basis. So just keep that in mind as well. Is you know, there's a lot of different needs that are going on with each of these parolees, and our agents will be a valuable asset to help you in discussions, and we want to know too how our parolees are doing when they come in for employment services. So they'll be interested in hearing your piece as well.
All individuals on parole are given general and special conditions of parole. The general conditions of parole are the following. They're required to report to their assigned parole agent on the first working day following their release from prison or county jail, as previously mentioned. They have to inform their agent of record of any residence, employment, education, or training that they're going to attend. Any change or anticipated change to their residence shall be reported to the supervising parole agent in advance. The parole agent must be notified within 72 hours of any changes to their employment, location, employer, or termination of employment. In regards to travel or instructions from the parole agent, the parolee shall comply with instructions from the supervising parole agent. They shall not travel more than 50 miles from a residence of record without prior approval from the parole agent. They shall not be absent from their county of residence for a period of more than 48 hours without prior approval. They shall not leave the state of California without prior written approval from their agent of record. They shall not engage in conduct prohibited by law. They shall immediately inform their agent of record of any arrest for felonies or misdemeanors. They shall not use, or have access to any weapons. Special conditions of parole vary for each individual parolee. Special conditions of parole are imposed when there is a nexus or information reasonably related to the parolee's commitment, offense, criminal conduct, or future criminality.
And it's, you know, something about the conditions of parole. There are some standard ones which we have there posted for you to kind of review. Those are standard to all parolees who are under state supervision. Special conditions of parole are going to be individualized for each person, and depending on the crime and their criminal history will be specific. So for instance, you could have somebody who has a current substance abuse issue. So the condition of parole, a special one would be to get them involved in some sort of treatment, right, to address that issue. But those are all specific to each offender. And so those are conditions that may or may not be applicable to their employment, and that's when you can have conversations with the specific agents of record on anything that might pertain to the employment.
A transfer investigation could take up to 30 days. If a transfer is approved and the parolee commits a parole violation, he or she will be returned to the county of last legal residence. Most transfers are approved on a case-by-case basis. The types of transfers that we have are inter-county transfers, out-of-county transfers, administrative transfers, and interstate transfers.
So that's just saying basically that where we supervise them, normally a parolee is returned to their county of last legal residence. So if they were living in San Mateo County, then they're required to parole to San Mateo County. Unless they have a demonstrated support system in another county or a verifiable career job opportunity, we are able to, for certain reasons, we can transfer them. So that's why you may have somebody who's been out on parole in another county all of a sudden showing up at potentially at your AJCC, who was working with an AJCC in another county. Their parole was able to be transferred based on support systems or residence, that kind of thing.
Employment must be approved by the agent of record. The agent of record may preclude a parolee from participating in certain jobs when there's a nexus with the job and the parolee's criminal history. For example, if a parolee has a history of residential burglaries and is attempting to gain employment entering residences as a painter, the agent of record is not going to approve that job.
And really, the agent of record is the case manager for this each parolee. So they're going to know what what restrictions their jobs are going to, on what jobs they could potentially apply for. So it's a good conversation piece to have with the agent upon the referral once we roll this out is, you know, what job restrictions might there be for this particular individual? And that's a good conversation to have.
Currently, the parole points of contact are for Northern Region, it's going to be Parole Agent 3 Stephen Wheeler. For our Southern Region, it's going to be Parole Agent 3 Sheila Greenbeck. And for our Division Headquarters, it will be me.
And just keep in mind, these are you know, this is a new, we're in constant development of how parole and the AJCCs, along with the Workforce Board and our other partners out there, excuse me, are working this prison to employment funding. These points of contact will change, but these are some initial people that you can contact if you have some general questions or need to find out which agent might be over a certain parolee if it's unknown to you. These are initially, but as we roll this out and firm up more of a process, we're working on that internally and with our partners to develop some specific points of contacts with each of the AJCCs out there. That will come. It's just we're working on it right now as we speak, actually. So stay tuned. These are kind of the preliminary points of contact. More information to come. Lots of good things going on. Right, Sydney?
Right.
Okay.
What can parole offer to the parolee? Parole agents offer supervision as well as linkage to substance abuse treatment programs, mental health treatment, medication-assisted treatment, housing, education, vocational trade programs, counseling, social service agencies, employment opportunities, job readiness programs, transportation, and cash assistance when available.
Sheila, I know you're on the phone there and you're co-presenting. Can you maybe share a little bit about some of the programs that you work with out there? And I know Steve Wheeler, you're out there as well. Can you share a little bit on this?
Yes. We work with Department of Rehab they actually come into the parole office, a few of our parole offices, and they provide services there. They're linked up with career expansion, some of the colleges, some of substance abuse program, some housing assistance program, that they assist us with providing services to this population. It's been a benefit to us, we see, with our networking with these services. But the vocational trade program, like I said, is colleges that we network with. We have Pierce College. We have San Bernardino College, L.A. Trade Tech College. They actually come to the field offices and are co-located our office supply services. EDD as well. We have some offices where EDD representatives come out to assist. We're currently working with a Just in Reach program through the Amity Foundation, where they actually come out and they transport our population to job interviews, to appointments with social services. Agencies. We have MAT that comes out, our medication assisted treatment program. They're located where they come out and they do injectables at various offices. And of course, mental health, we have our POC in addition to SUT that comes out and provides services as well. So we have a lot of different services that we provide, transportation, cash assistance. We do have cash assistance for them, whereas we assist with providing tap cards, our bus passes for them to get to and from different events, activities, or programs in which they have appointments to get to. The agent of record also transports. So if we're not able to get a parolee there via public transportation in a timely manner, the agent of record will step in and provide that service. Department of Social Services also co-locates at our facilities here down south. And they actually come in and do enrollments for Medi-Cal, for CalFresh, food stamps, services for our population. So we do have a lot of services and agencies that we're working with currently to assist this population, and it's growing. We're networking and collaborating every day, and we see that there's a tremendous benefit in it for our population. So definitely the rollout with the AJCZ is an added benefit. So this is great.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, there's some questions like, hey, what does parole offer our parolees? Well, parole doesn't really receive much funding for actual programs or services. We do have emergency, you know, assistance when needed. Really, the thing about parole is we are linkages and we are advocates, and we are good at getting our parolees to the right programs and services that they need to establish themselves and reenter society. So we utilize all the community services out there that probably a lot of the AJCCs are already using as well. You know, with the wraparound services and whole person philosophies, and that's our goal, is to get every need met by this the agencies that are out in the community. And we have a really strong partnership with our Division of Rehabilitative Programs. They contract with our community provider partners that provide largely substance use treatment disorder in the community. They have residential treatment, they have sober living, we have various modalities of treatment in the community, and they are the ones that actually contract and specifically serve parolees that we utilize often. So again, the agent's role in all this is to find out what needs they have and to link them with those resources as best we can. So we, you know, you have on there the screen all the linkages to all those services. And like Sheila was mentioning, you know, we do have cash assistance, transportation, food vouchers, emergency stuff. So, you know, our bread and butter is the referrals and linkages, and our partnerships are what make us collaboratively successful, is we have all these resources to use. So just wanted to kind of make sure we talked about those different things. Anything else from DAPO on that?
Go ahead. Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Sheila and Ryan just put in. You know, a great way that we've been bringing all these linkages together is our monthly PAC meetings with all, you know, all through the region and the state. All these services that we've mentioned here and that we're seeing on the PowerPoint, all the providers all come together in the, you know, one big group meeting that we have for these parolees, and they are given that face-to-face contact, that linkage, and offered all these services at our PAC meeting.
Yeah, and in addition to that, we do hold resource fairs and employment fairs in addition to our PAC meetings, our LIFER meetings, our women empowerment meetings. In addition to that, we also hold, once again, employment and resource fairs, where all of these agencies I spoke about come together and assist our population. So they're given multiple opportunities to take advantage of services. So we're doing our best to be in the community, networking and collaborating. These services are at no cost, and they're strictly on a voluntary basis, just coming out to support our population. Because I think from a DAPO standpoint, we really feel that this is what's necessary and needed in order for our population to succeed. So we're out there trying to do the best that we can to get the best possible result for our population success.
And just something, too, to chime in on that, just so the AJCCs are aware, the services that each county offer and each area offer can vary dramatically. So we might not have as many programs available in, you know, rural counties or counties that are already full. You know, we run up to that often, but just be aware that, you know, the services that we link to on the screen, while those are, we do utilize all of those, they may vary based on county and based on availability. So just keep that in mind, too, is, you know, we're doing the same thing you guys are doing. We're referring our participants, our parolees, to programs and services that they need in the community. So those just can vary depending on the areas. Anything else?
Maybe send a referral to AJCC. All HACCs have been inputted into DAPO's parole violation tracking system. Parole agents will be ready to make referrals upon being notified of the formalized process and the AJCCs receiving funding. Referrals made to AJCCs will be on a voluntary basis, meaning that it wouldn't be a mandatory requirement for the individuals to attend, but it will be made available for them. What does the AJCC need to be prepared to offer parolee? What does the AJCC need to be prepared to offer parolee? Ideally, parolee should receive all services as any individual walking into an AJCC and be treated no different than any other individuals who walk in. And that's a fear with our population, because sometimes they have a difficulty expressing themselves or explaining what it is they exactly want or need. So it sets in sometimes a bit of frustration on their part. So we just ask that you bear with them when they come in there, because you're going to see all different types. Some will understand a little better than others, and some you're going to have to spend a little more time trying to explain the process to them, because they may not initially get it the first time around. DAPO MOUs with RPUs, currently waiting on one final MOU. I think that seems to be it. I guess we can open up to questions, Ryan.
Yeah, so one of the things I was just going to chime in on back there was, I know there's been in meetings we've had and conversations with preliminary conversations, there's some unknown about the parole populations for some folks out there. And I just wanted to say that generally, not every case, but generally the parolees that walk into your offices are going to be motivated to get a job. You're not going to have people who don't want to be there necessarily in there. So they're going to be really appreciative of your services. We'll refer them there, but we're not forcing them to go there. It's not a condition of parole that they go there. But, they're going to have a lot of different issues, and they have criminal backgrounds and whatnot. But we don't want you guys to think that, the big scary people are going to be coming in. It's going to be people who need a job, who are there because they need help. And they're going to be eager and thankful for the services that you guys are providing. So we just, and if there was ever a problem, you'll have the agent's name, you'll have the points of contact. So, but we don't think that's going to be much of an issue. But just wanted to encourage everybody to, as you all do a great job, and I've met a lot of awesome people who are actually already meeting with our populations anyway, is continue what you're doing, because you're making a difference. And our parolees, this is really one of the first opportunities they've really had to really have this specialized funding specifically for them to really have our employment reach out, you guys reaching out to them to help them. So we're really excited. We're really motivated to get this automated referral with you guys started. And so we look forward to many more good days ahead.
Yeah. So this is Sydney Armendariz. And with that being said, let's go ahead and jump into some questions. I did see someone raise their hand on Adobe Connect. I think it was Dr. Ali. If you want to go ahead and unmute your line, Dr. Ali, go ahead. And while he or she is asking their question, go ahead and type your questions into the chat box, and we'll get to those as well. Go ahead, Dr. Ali. Maybe they got a little shy on us.
No, they're muted. Oh. So, everyone's muted. Everyone's muted. So, they have to type in the question.
Oh, okay. Okay, I think everyone might be muted. My apologies for that misunderstanding. Dr. Ali, if you could type in your question into the chat box, then we can read it out loud and go ahead and answer it. One question we do see, just real quick, what is an AJCC? It is an American Job Center for California. So those are the, they used to be called one-stops, if you're familiar with that terminology. They are the centers that are responsible for offering direct employment and training and educational services to clients. They receive WIOA, Workforce Investment Opportunity Act, money from the federal government, and that's dispersed through the Employment Development Department. And so we see another question: what happens when a person is on both parole and probation? So I'll have DAPO go ahead and respond to that.
When a person's both on probation and parole, they have two people they have to that's supervising them, so they have to report both to the probation officer and to the parole agent. So we always encourage the individual to notify the parole agent as well as the probation officer that they're both on both probation and parole supervision, so they can communicate and know what's going on.
And usually with those cases, those are pretty rare, but you know, the agent and the probation officer more than likely will be talking and will be, you know, involved with that person. And so, you know, if there's questions, if there's differences or issues that you come up with and when you're assisting that person, you know, just be speaking with the agent and be speaking with the probation officer and making sure, you know, it's a team effort. And, you know, we do work with them and we partner with probation. So hopefully we're able to address any differences in supervision or employment opportunities, you know, between the two.
So we see a question about, are there services available to help people obtain their right to work documents? Can you answer that, or do you want me to try to take that? It's
up to you. Are we talking pre-release, post-release?
I guess both. If it's pre-release, then I guess you can speak to that. Both. Yeah, both. Okay.
Okay, so I don't know if we have, this is Bill Neese from CDCR. I don't know if we have any of our CDCR DRP staff online. I was hoping maybe they would chime in on this. Yeah, oh, you know what? They're not. They would be on mute.
Oh, yeah.
So pre-release inside of CDCR prisons, there is a transitions program that targets our population prior to their release into the community, between 9 and 18 months. It's a 5-week course, and it covers such things as right to work documentation, but where we're limited, because that usually involves everything up to their Cal ID, we do not have the ability to give inmates while they're incarcerated inside of our prisons California driver's license. So the Cal ID program is something we do work. That's not to say that we're 100% on Cal ID. Once they are released into out of the prison, and then they're out either in probation or parole supervision, then they have the right then to go to the DMV to get those documents. Now, some of that documentation may be a little complicated, specifically for like lifers, because lifers have a little more complex case. They may have been incarcerated much longer. So the services for that, generally speaking, are post-release, but that is actually defined probably more so through the DMV. And I know that's kind of high level. I don't know if there's any more specific questions about that.
And this is Sydney. Just to add to that, too, I've talked to a few AJCC representatives who actually help the client set up their DMV appointment to go get their ID. There are some instances where DMV will come out to the AJCC and kind of set up a little temporary workstation there. So there are different options to bring the DMV either to the person or to set up that direct link, so the person can just pretty much walk in with an appointment to their local DMV as well. Moving on to the rest of the questions, we got a few about the will the PowerPoint presentation be available? Yes, it will be. We can send it out via email, and then we will also post them on our P2E webpage as well. So we will try to get that done either today or early tomorrow. One question from the Department of Rehabilitation. They said it's great to hear that relationships are being built with DOR. Are there statistics on the number of parolees with disabilities, by type of disabilities? And then is there access to either SSI or SDI after release?
So I don't have statistics in my pocket at the moment, but yes, we have a significant portion of our parolee populations that do have various types of disabilities, and we are aware of those, you know, within the institution, then upon release to parole. And generally, so let me go back. Almost all inmates in prison are offered applications to apply for Social Security and Medi-Cal prior to release, if they're eligible. Also, veterans benefits, our transitional case management program, which is contracted through DAPO. It's like a pre-release application process. So if they had any disabilities that would give them that Social Security or SDI, they would be eligible, and the application will actually go to the county that they're going to parole to. And our agents, you know, will know what disability they have and are able to, you know, refer them to those various entities out in the community that will help them. So we can hopefully, if you have specific questions on statistics, you can let us know. We can try to answer that.
Thank you. And then we received a question. How are cash incentives determined?
Sheila or Steven, you want to address that one? Do you mind?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. We use them, for example, we have a number of programs. We have the PAC meeting, the Women Empowerment meeting, our PRAM, which is known as our LIFER meeting. And if you want to set up an incentive base, the agent, what they will usually do when they're doing their goals and progress with their parolee, they could say, for example, if you attend a PAC meeting, you come prepared, you dress, you have your resume. The DA may be in attendance and may say, hey, okay, who has their resume today? Who's ready to go to work? Who got a job? You can give them an incentive. An incentive can be a Target gift card. It could be a bus pass. It could be a certificate of achievement. So it could be a number of things, the incentive. But usually it's based on a goal that was set by the agent. It could be simply we had an absconder that never reported. And he reported, and then he went to a program we referred him to. He completed the program. All of this is something deserving of recognition. So it is our encouragement for them to continue to keep doing better and keep doing well. So this is how we apply incentives. It can be anywhere from a Target gift card to a bus pass to a TAP card to a certificate of achievement. We just want to recognize their effort, no matter how small, just in hopes that it will motivate and promote them to continue to do well.
Thank you, Sheila. So the next question is, this is helpful to learn that programs and services differ by each county. Question is regarding ISMIP and the potential of that coming to an end. ISMIP has provided vital wraparound and like a one-stop comprehensive programming option for parolees with mental health issues. What are the next steps after ISMIP?
So that's particular to the mental health program within CDCR and specifically to DAPO. We're not privy to whether that's ending or not. I haven't heard that. I've heard there's proposals out there, but so I can't really answer that. We can direct you to a point of contact who's over mental health, and we'll have you able to connect with them and find out more information on that.
Thank you. Next question is, are agents required to visit work sites?
So, Lori, good question. We are not required to visit their work sites. Now, that being said, usually when a parolee comes out and talks to their agent, you know, depending on the severity of the crime and different case factors, we may establish if you get a job, we'll be out there to visit you and meet your boss. So it's kind of up to each agent. They are allowed to, because anywhere the parolee is physically, our agents legally have a right to be there with them. Now, that being said, our agents are generally cognizant of, you know, if the employer may or may not know they're on parole, and that's a conversation the agent would have with the parolee. And so we do employment visits on occasion, but that's kind of case by case. And a lot of times it's just the parolees are usually very honest with their employers, let them know they're on parole. So it's just a matter of, you know, checking in on them, how they're doing, how can we help them. And really, I hope that that the agencies out there on this call see that we're really trying to advocate for our parolees, especially in work and positive pro-social programming in the community. So they're not required, but they do go out to visits, employments on occasion.
Yeah. We won't serve as a distraction. If they work at a McDonald's, we may walk in, you may, you know, wave them a fan, you know, wave them a hello and walk out. If they're on a, you know, say for example, doing labor work at a construction site, you may walk by and make eye contact with them, smile and keep going. So we won't interrupt their work day. We won't do anything to interrupt their work day. So
thank you. So, mm-hmm. Lori, we also see your question. I attended a CRT meeting last week and wasn't able to attend the presentation about an app or program for communicating with PA. Not sure the name of the program. Does probation use a similar system? So we'll follow up with you directly about this question. We need some more information from you, some more clarification to see if we can address your question. So we do see it and we'll be in contact with you. Next, the question is, what kind of employment services and resources are available while incarcerated?
Speaking for what kind of employment services and resources are available while incarcerated, the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation offers a whole host and array of work opportunities for the inmate population. Prisons are actually like little cities, so we have everything from as simple as someone who picks up garbage on the recreational yard, those who do recycle work, to those who do clerical work, food services, but we also have a whole host of other opportunities, which could include the inmates participating in CTE programs, career technical education programs, that will lead them into different types of occupations. The Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation partnered with CalPIA, which is the California Prison Industry Authority, actually trains offenders to 9 of the 15 states' industry sectors. And so we have an array of offerings, and they vary from prison to prison. Not every single institution is going to offer, as an example, automotive repair or electrical CTE-type program. Carpentry, roofing, and there is actually a list. So what I will do is I will get that list over to Sydney so they can post it on the website. And as well, PIA offers a whole host of training programs and offerings as well. And within the institution setting, we do have a classification committee. All of our inmates go to that classification committee. They are participants in our classification process. They are asked what they have interest in doing so that we don't try to place somebody who has an interest in working in programming or coding, for example, and put them into a construction type of occupation. And conversely, if somebody has an interest in working outdoor with their hands, we wouldn't also put them into a training program where they would be working on a computer. California Prison Industry Authority has temporarily hired 35 workforce development coordinators within the state to help also with directing to vacancies we have. We have similarly inside of CDCR with regard to workforce development, some of the same obstacles that are being faced out in the community in that there's competition for a lot of our inmate population. And so while there are certain services that are considered critical needs to run an institution, then there are also other occupational and educational opportunities and offerings. And the inmates' buy-in on that process is super critical because we don't want to place an offender into a program that doesn't meet their needs. So I suppose a list would be better, but there are assistive aids. And then once the offender gets into the transitions class, which is taught by our Office of Correctional Education staff, they cover everything from resume building, interview techniques, how to, they actually discuss how to get a job, hygiene, terminology, dress code for their interviews. And it covers like I said, that's a 5-week course. It covers a whole array. That curriculum was just revisited with assistance from Alameda County. And so our curriculum sort of addresses all of that. And so the institution setting offers an awful lot of program opportunities. And so one of the gaps that connecting with AJCCs in the workforce world, I think they're going to be super beneficial to our inmate population, is that many times they have not believed that something out there really is waiting for them in a positive way. And even in transitions courses, I know Heather Alexander up in NorTech has been going into prison transitions training programs, and a lot of our vendors have echoed to her their fear of walking into the AJCC environment, and they feel like they feel more dread walking into an AJCC than maybe you and I feel walking into a prison. So all of the resources that we have and offer the offender population will go into their work experience, their training, certifications, qualifications, and degrees, and hopefully we can begin to really, in a warm handoff way, connect that information to you. We do have a summary sheet that we're working on, all of their accomplishments, their work history, and their degrees and credentialing, that doesn't have anything that's confidential nor HIPAA related, and we want to be able to finalize that document so that we're passing off something that sort of gives a transcript in at a high level of all the things that have been accomplished. PIA is also working on something like that as well. So we want to better give you their accomplishments and better connect them with the services that might be in your regional planning unit.
And Bill, we received a follow-up question. Are the transition classes mandated or optional?
Good question. Thank you, Lori. The transitions classes are, the inmate can refuse to go into the transitions. Everything's optional, right? I guess for our issue is we have difficulty getting the majority of our population into transitions classes, because the way that people get incarcerated into prison, their sentences are structured in different ways, and there are a myriad of different ways to reduce your release date. So it does complicate a lot of getting the offenders into that if they're in a work assignment, if they're in an educational assignment. And so actually inmate assignments at a prison complicates that. Most of the offenders who are going to go to transitions would want to go. So I don't think really the issue is so much they are opting out as much as our inability to give it to every single one of our offenders.
And I just wanted to quickly chime in on that too. For the pre-release, about 6 months prior to release, we have parole staff in the institutions that will actually meet with all inmates who are about to release. And one of the things we do is we do an assessment to see what type of needs they'll have when they reach the community. And they'll actually, if an employment need comes up, which is usually the case, our staff will actually do referrals, form a little case plan for that individual when he goes to his county. They'll make a referral, and historically it was to the Employment Development Department, the one-stops that were generally referred to. That will obviously change to the American Job Centers of California, and especially as we roll this out. So what we are going to do is basically they're going to have contact with the inmate prior to release, and then upon release, our goal is to then have the agent then do a referral to make sure that they have the information of their local AJCC. It might be, depending on where they're paroling to, like LA County, the staff in the prison may not know exactly the right AJCC, but that hopefully will be cleared up by the time the person actually reports to the parole office. So they are being touched and talked to and encouraged in employment prior to release. And also, as Bill was mentioning, they have a ton of work opportunities and training opportunities and various apprenticeships and different opportunities that Prison Industries Authority helps. Prison Industry Authorities also helps them too, and helps them with referring to employment opportunities in the community as well. So they are being touched a lot within the prison, and then once they're released, we do then the linkages to the resources in the community.
And speaking of prior to release, we have a few questions about are parole officers assigned prior to release, and what if you can kind of summarize what that process looks like.
So yes, so basically most of the reentry activities as far as that transition from prison to parole happen within 9 months prior to that actual earliest possible release date that Estelina mentioned earlier. So one of the they do their pre-release paperwork. It's determined which county they're going to go to, or if there's a program available. Sometimes we're able to directly place in the programs. And then that paperwork goes to the field side of the house, where they're going to determine exactly which parole office they're going to be supervised out of based on the address that's provided, which agent's assigned. That agent then will review the inmate's case factors and file and determine what special conditions are needed. And then basically have that case plan and those special conditions, and that we call it a release program study. It's basically has all the information, the vital information that the field needs. That's signed off on and sent back to the inmate. That DAPO staff will serve that back to the inmate so they know where they're paroling to, who their agent will be, who the and any other conditions of parole that will be placed on them when they get out.
Thank you. So we received another question. What are the options for helping undocumented parolees, such as parolees that don't have legal status, are not able to work, are not eligible for benefits, etc.? Can you kind of touch on that?
Yeah. So, you guys correct me if you know anything newer than when I was out there last. But basically, we have the same struggle with undocumented or here illegally, and we can refer them to like the local embassy or the foreign department of the country they're from. Those agencies or entities will help them on that kind of thing and advocate for them. We provide them a parolee ID, which is not the greatest ID in the world, but we do what we can to help them. But oftentimes they're kind of in this limbo and it needs family support because they can't get those documents. So we refer them where we can to local programs that don't check for legal status. And we're able to, in our Division of Rehabilitative Programs, if they're on parole, they're eligible for a lot of our services. So it's not going to matter if they're illegal here illegally or not, or not able to work. So those are tough cases, and we refer them to the agencies that could help them, and really it's up to the family and the parolee to get out there and get the help they need for those services.
And a follow-up question was, can we have a list of those agencies? I can work with our DAPO counterparts to see if we can put together some information, or if I can send out some referral links as well. So I will definitely work on that one. So the next question is, with there being a 50-mile limitation and restriction on crossing state lines, is there any way this limitation can be relaxed for those parolees who are seeking a Class A truck driving job?
So, yes. That condition can be, if they have an employment, verified employment that takes them beyond the 50 miles, that's up to the parole agent and this unit supervisor over that area to determine what restrictions or limitations can be relaxed. Generally, we are for employment, so just keep that in mind. There may be other factors. If an agent denies that, there may be other factors that you're not aware of that we would want to limit them, such as high risk, or maybe there's a serious or sex offense that would preclude them from some kind of travel. But in general, if it's a verified employment and it's a good paying job, there's no reason why that couldn't be relaxed depending on the situation. So the agent will look at all the case factors and make that determination along with this unit supervisor.
Thank you. And then we received another question. Is there a standard referral form used to refer out to various resources? So this kind of talks about the new and upcoming referral process we'll have.
Yeah, good question, Lisa. So prior to this P2E funding, parole uses, Sheila mentioned it, our pivot system. And what that basically is, it's a lot of things. But one of it we have a list of our resources and automated referrals. So we're able to refer directly to a program, such as our Division of Rehabilitative Programs for drug treatment. We have other non-state sponsored programs in there. And this is one of them that we've put in our database. So we now currently have all American Job Centers of California in our database. And once we go live with this, once we once we put out a memo and instruct our agents the ability to do this, they'll have the ability to send it. Basically, when you, it'll be an email to you. It'll be an information on the parolees, who the parolee is, and who the agent is, and that they've been referred to you. Now, we do want to talk about briefly. So this is the initial rollout. Will be this email, basically letting you know that this person has been referred to you for employment services. We are looking at further developing this, and we are working with California Workforce Board and the Employment Development Department and others to see how we can streamline our referral to go directly into CalJobs database itself, so that it'll automate it, so that it's not just a PDF coming to your email, but it'll be directly into CalJobs database, into your local AJCC, who can then work with that client directly. That's our goal. That's more long-term. This is kind of like, hey, the first rollout's going to be, hey, just so you know, there's somebody interested in employment who lives in your area, and can you please contact them and begin working with them, and here's the agent who's over that person. So at this point, it's very simple, just a simple PDF email, and we hope to further develop that as we go.
And I see Lori Hensley posted a link to find locations for the AJCCs. Thank you so much for posting that link. We appreciate that. And then we also have another question. I work with women in a federal prison. Do you know how parole or probation is assigned to them upon release? I know you kind of touched on that. Is there any other information you can offer?
If they're in federal prison, they're actually supervised by federal probation, not state parole or county probation. It's all federal. So basically, the federal probation supervises what they'd be considered both probation and parole for the federal government. They are totally separate from the state or county agencies. They have their own method of supervision. You'd have to contact your local federal probation office to have them answer that question.
Thank you. So we've reached the end of the questions in the chat box. If you have another question or a follow-up question, please feel free to type it in and we will address it. Since we still have some time, we did ask on the registration link that you all provide us questions in advance as well, so I can kind of address a few of those. So we received questions about job placement strategies for reentry clients. And that is pretty much what we're going to be working on as far as offering technical assistance to our P2E grantees and their partners. We have a partnership with the Center for Employment Opportunity, CEO Works, out in the Bay Area. They tend to host a lot of webinars regarding more of the strategies and best practices for hiring reentry folks. So if you are interested in learning more about those webinars, you can reach out to either myself or Joe Flores, and we will connect you with the right person in our department to have you receive more information about those webinars. We also got a question about general information about expungement and resources. So for that, we would refer you back to your local community-based organizations. They tend to have a lot of resources to help people get their records expunged, to help with legal clinics, things like that. If you need a direct linkage, please again reach out to myself or my team. Our contact information is in, I think, the second or third slide on this presentation. So we can try to better assist you and find a CBO that's located near you. Other than that, we just received a lot of interest in best practices and resources. So that will be coming. We are planning to roll out more technical assistance once the grant is actually funded, give you guys a chance to get the programs up and running. And then our field specialist, who you probably all know, Rafael Aguilera, will be working with you all to better assist you in rolling out this P2E grant initiative as well. Let's see.
Can I just wanted to share one more thing about the referrals? So, you know, in anticipation of this prison to employment funding rollout, parole will be working with the AJCCs on these referrals. Just keep in mind that you may already be working with these parolees, as we mentioned earlier, but our agents, you know, we haven't noticed them on this new opportunity for this prison to employment funding as of yet. We're crafting a memo and instructions for them to utilize. Kind of once the funding's there and our relationships with the local AGCCs are in place in the next couple months. However, that being said, they still do technically have access to this system, and they some of our go-getter agents may be sending you referrals before this process is in place. And, you know, just be aware that those might come, and hopefully you're able to address those and meet with those parolees if they have employment needs prior to this funding based on the WIOA funding that's already in place. We're hoping that, you know, if by chance you do get some referrals prior to the official release, that you're able to help those and assist those parolees.
And regarding expungement services, Sarah Wenser posted in the chat box, most counties have a clean slate program through their public defender's offices that can help people once they're off of supervision to clean up their records through reduction of convictions and or expungement. Thank you so much, Sarah, for that extra information. And Miraville posted, Roots and Rebound hosts various clean slate fairs throughout the state as well. So thank you. So, is the Prison to Employment Initiative for both parolees and those on probation? Yes. It's for any justice-involved individual. So, if you would like more information about the P2E initiative directly, you can either contact myself or check out our website at cwdb.ca.gov. And we have the RFA, the request for applications, that we posted back in February, and that gives a lot of good content about the specifics for the P2E grant initiative as well.
Hey, Sheila and Steven, I wanted to see if you guys could briefly touch on what the PACT meetings are. And, you know, we want to share our resources and form partnerships with everybody who's involved in this. And so I think inviting them to those, obviously some are already attending, but can you just kind of touch on what the PACT meetings are and how a AJCC or other reentry partner could participate in those?
Sure. The PACT meeting is Parole and Community Team Meeting, and it's mandatory for all of our parolees that are newly released from state prison and or parole violation. What it is an assembly of providers ranging from Department of Public Social Services, Child Support Services, Tattoo Removal, Department of Rehabilitation, other community colleges and vocational trade program, the Department of Motor Vehicles is in attendance. It's kind of a one-stop shop where we get out in the community, the parole agent two specialists get out in the community and collaborate and network to bring in services that the population needs. And it's our hope that we would jumpstart them in the right direction. So if they have child support issues or they have arrearage pending when they get out and they can't get their driver's license, we have representatives there that can assist them with challenges that they may have initially from the onset of their parole. So it's great. And if you haven't come out, reach out to me and I can link you up with a PAC meeting or PAC calendar for a meeting in your area. Some of the AJCCs have attended and they were just blown away. They were amazed with all of the vendors and providers that have come out. We have peer mentoring programs that come out just to help our population. Veterans organizations are there to assist our vets. So it's really a great assembly and showing of network and collaboration with our providers.
Yeah, I'd like to just emphasize all of our providers to these PAC meetings. I mean, they're all on a voluntary basis. You know, and they're there, they're invited, they're asked, you know, to bring these services that help specific, like the right to work documents, our basic documents, you know. Guys being incarcerated for so long, it's hard to get their birth certificate to help to get their IDs or stuff like that. And we have these vendors, they come in and they help them and assist with either starting the paperwork or point them in the right direction on how to get these documents. So... And then a lot of employment resources are there, you know, and to assist with a lot of the job preps. So,
I just wanted to chime in a little bit there with Stephen Wheeler's comment. because he invited me to a PAC meeting, Contra Costa County, wherein they held it at their local workforce investment board, and they were able to steer the parolee population over to the AJCC. So if nothing else, they got to see where it was at. I was there physically present, and I noticed that some of the parolees chose not to go to the AJCC. But it's a better and a warm handoff, and so if that's something that can be replicated in your area, certainly would encourage you to work with parole in your area to co-locate a PAC meeting or volunteer to host a PAC meeting. It sort of ensures that warm connection in the community from parole right into the world of workforce for the offender population.
Yeah, we would like to invite you and your agency to come. So I know there's some questions about there about the email address. It's in the PowerPoint slide too. If you are in the southern region, basically LA County South, you'd contact Sheila Greenbeck, and the address is there. And if it's in the north of that, it would be Stephen Wheeler, which is that in here too? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in our PowerPoint slide too. So they actually are the supervisors statewide over all of those PAC meetings, and they can direct you to the parole agent too. That would be over your area.
So it looks like we don't have any other questions in the chat box. I'll just do a last call for any additional questions. I can give you a few moments to type it in. Otherwise, we can end early. So if you have any other questions, please go ahead and type them in now. Okay, I don't see anyone typing. So I'm going to assume that you are all experts now in all things parole. So hopefully this has been very informative and helpful to you all. Oh, somebody got them in. Oh, three people. So let's see. We got a question about ex-lifers needing therapy and the point of contact used to provide it. Used to be mandated for ex-lifers, any availability. Do you all know anything about that?
So it looks like Ava's question there. If Ava, if you're referring to, it says ex-lifers, so I'm assuming they've discharged parole if they're ex-lifers. Because if you're on parole, our POC, what that is a parolee outpatient clinic. It's mental health clinicians and psychiatrists that help and assist our parolees with mental health issues. After they parole, we generally work with the counties to the behavioral health at the counties to assume that treatment. So our referrals are then to wherever the lifer is living or person is living, they'll make contact with the county and do a referral directly to that county to assist them with further issues once their parole period ends. So hopefully Eva, that answered your question.
It looks like Eva's typing back a response. We'll give her a moment to do that. Possibly. Oh, we did receive two compliments. Great job, everyone, and very helpful. So thank you for that. Let's see. Eva is still talking. Oh, Tri-Valley Career Center, we see you typing as well, so we can give you a few moments, too. Oh, thank you. It's another compliment. Appreciate that. And Eva's still typing.
You know, one thing I would encourage too, you know, there's not a lot of parole folks on the phone here. On our end, we're talking to our parole folks, encouraging them to go out and meet you guys in the community, bring their agents over, and we would encourage you. You have a list of the addresses of the parole offices, and you know, feel free to call them up and talk to the supervisor or the parole administrator over the area, and offer, you know, to come do presentations or meetings together. I think the more we talk with one another and find out what, you know, what each person in this reentry equation is doing, the better and stronger we'll be. And that's our goal, is to help each one of you meet your local parole offices and agents.
So it looks like Eva had a follow-up question. POC used to be mandated for therapy, but not anymore. For ex-lifers still in TX, can they still get therapy without POC?
Yeah, so lifers can always get any kind of help they need while they're on parole. Our POC clinicians are available Monday through Friday at the offices there. They can speak with their agent if they need help and services. A lot of times, you know, the clinician and the parolee and the agent will meet and determine that outpatient services may not be needed or they're needed more. And so that's really a collaboration between the three of those entities there. And they'll determine, yes, services are always available for parolees. If they're not on parole, we would refer them to the county for supervision or local program.
Perfect. Thank you, Eva, for those questions. And so to just wrap everything up, again, we hope that you found this helpful for you in your work regarding the P2E initiative and even in general with working with reentry clients. We will post these slides and the audio recording on our webpage by the end of the week. You will also receive a short evaluation survey, and it should only take you about 2 minutes. We would greatly appreciate your feedback on this webinar and then also your ideas for future webinars or technical assistance opportunities as well. So thank you, everyone, for joining, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.